In 1880, a photographer with a tainted reputation unveiled a new invention at the home of Leland Stanford, a railroad magnate who had been the governor of California. The presentation was brief, but made a lasting impression and would eventually transform our culture. It was the first moving picture. Edward Ball tells the story of this invention and the collaboration between two men that made it possible in his new book, The Inventor and the Tycoon, A Gilded Age Murder and the Birth of Moving Pictures. Mr. Ball won the National Book Award for his book, Slaves in the Family, and this new one is published by Doubleday. I'm very pleased it has brought him back to our show. Hello.
Hi. Nice to be here.
People who know something about the history of photography and film might be familiar with the name Edward Muybridge, but can you tell us who he was?
He was a British-born photographer, born in 1830, who came to America during the Gold Rush.
And is that what brought him here?
No, he was 20 years old when he arrived in New York City in 1850, and he became a bookseller. And then he moved to California when he was swept up in this frenzy about the pioneering state. And he continued to sell books now in San Francisco. But it was only in his 30s, after going back to England and then returning to the U.S., that he became a photographer. And it was, in other words, in midlife, he became an artist and started to make a difference.
Was he continually remaking himself? He changed his name a few times.
He changed his name five times. He was born Edward Muggeridge. He became Edward Muybridge, Edward Muybridge. And then he changed his name to a medieval spelling of Edward, Edvard Muybridge. After a while, he used the name Helios.
Sun,
the god of the sun. He was a photographer who wanted to wear his publicity on his sleeve, I guess.
So he was, but he's still a pioneer of photography. There weren't a lot of photographers at that time. Did he immediately establish himself as somebody who did good work?
In California, during the late 1860s, he was one of the first photographers to document Yosemite, that seven-mile-long valley in central California.
Long before Ansel Adams discovered the place.
Long before, yes. And he made huge photographs that sold very well and won him a lot of prizes. And so in his first wave of success, he was a landscape photographer. He worked also for the U.S. government. He photographed an Indian war called the Modoc War. He photographed the purchase of Alaska. He photographed, he crisscrossed the West and made his living photographing the outdoors.
Now, that required a lot of huge equipment, didn't it?
It did. At the time, the process was called wet plate photography. You had to take a piece of glass and pour this glue over it, which contained the light-sensitive silver halide. And each picture had to be made individually, and you had to carry bottles of flammable fluid, and it was very cumbersome.
If people remember Muybridge, they remember him for photographs he did that were in series. What led him to create his famous series of still photographs of a horse running?
In 1871, he met Leland Stanford, who was the richest man west of the Mississippi, the president of the Central Pacific Railroad, who lived in a 50,000-square-foot house.
Former governor of California.
Former governor of California, who owned about 100 thoroughbred horses. And Muybridge was down-at-heels artist who wore beat-up jackets and floppy hats, and he was barely presentable in polite society. And he befriended this guy, Stanford, when Stanford asked him to photograph his horses. Stanford was fascinated by this question. Do horses in a gallop ever leave the ground? Do their 4 feet ever come off the ground? This was something that was batted around equestrian circles. It was known as unsupported transit. And Stanford said, Muybridge, here's $50,000. I'll give you 10 horses. You can work right here in my Palo Alto estate and answer this question. And this was how Muybridge came to photograph horses famously in the early 1870s.
But he did something. He had to work out a very complicated system to capture the to answer the question of whether a horse actually left all 4 feet of the horse left the ground while it was running.
He did. He built a shed and put 12 cameras in it side by side, and he would have the horses run down the length of the shed and shoot each exposure individually. First, using strings that stretched across the track, the horse would break the string and expose the photograph, and later using an electromagnet that knocked off each exposure in rapid sequence.
And what did he discover? Does the horse leave the ground?
In fact, the horse's feet leave the ground, yeah. And it was with this work that he became instantly nationally famous and quite well known in Europe, because no one had seen anything like this before. Stop-motion photography is what we would call it today. And then he decided he would build a projector that could project these images in sequence and make them move on a screen. And that he did.
So it would be kind of like a herky-jerky movement, but it would be a motion picture, wouldn't it?
It was. It was a motion picture, and he's often described as the originator of motion pictures because of this. And he adapted a magic lantern, which was a kind of projector of the day, and put a wheel on it with his images and spun the wheel, and the pictures flew into motion. And this is the first time this had been accomplished with photography. And it was a sensation. He became the toast of San Francisco, of New York, of Boston.
And let's talk a bit about Leland Stanford. His name is... he gave his name to the university, didn't he?
He did,
yes. Did he endow it?
He endowed it towards the end of his life with $5 million, which is the equivalent of, I don't know, $250 million today. And he built the university in the memory of his son, who had died at age 15. And it's called Leland Stanford Junior University. And it's sited on the same place as the estate where Muybridge photographed the horses.
Now, he was a governor of California. Did he do that before he went into the railroad business?
He did it simultaneously with his railroad project.
And California was already a state at that point?
California was a state, yes, ever since 1849. And Stanford was a lawyer who had come to California and become a shopkeeper in the 1850s. He was a grocer in Sacramento when a maniacal railroad promoter came to him. His name was Theodore Judah, and said, "Listen, if you help me finance the first stem of this railroad project, you'll become a very rich man." And so he did, and he became one of the first robber barons in the West.
And got the nickname the Octopus?
The Octopus was the name that the press gave to him and his organization because it choked off everything in its sight, including governments and other companies. It was one of the early monopolies.
Edward Ball is my guest. His latest book, The Inventor and the Tycoon, A Gilded Age Murder and the Birth of Moving Pictures. Was it common knowledge that Muybridge had committed a murder?
It was very common knowledge. In 1874 in San Francisco, he was married to a woman named Flora Downs, who was age 21, and Muybridge was 43, I think. And they had an asymmetrical marriage, and Flora Downs began to sleep with a man named Harry Larkins. Muybridge found out, and he went to Larkins' door, knocked on the door, and when Larkins answered, he said, "I have a message about my wife." And he shot him. And there was a sensational trial, which was covered in the papers coast to coast. And Muybridge was acquitted, even though he confessed to the crime.
Considered a crime of passion?
It was considered a crime of passion, known as a justifiable homicide in those days. What that meant was that husbands had the prerogative to kill their sexual rivals. And this was a common verdict right up until the 1940s, although women were never able to exercise the same justifiable homicide right.
What happened to the marriage?
Well, shortly after his acquittal, his then ex-wife got sick with influenza and died. So she moved out of the way. And it was after this murder and after this sensational event, which made him notorious, that he did this famous work with Stanford and the photography of the horses.
So it didn't hurt that he was notorious and he had this this whole new thing to exhibit. He toured with his, it's called a zoopraxiscope?
That's right, yes. This was the name he gave to his projector. He was very bad with names. After changing his name, he named his own equipment very poorly.
Did his relationship with Stanford continue on a strong level?
It did for 4 or 5 years, and then Stanford tried to take credit for the photographs by publishing a book that included the photographs but didn't mention Muybridge. And Stanford was sued by Muybridge, and their friendship ended, and they parted company. But for a period of about 10 years, this capitalist and this artist, two unlikely men, were partners in this incredible experiment in Frontier, California.
Well, not just horses. Muybridge did a lot of photographs of people moving around, and he liked to do them in the nude.
He did. He went to Philadelphia and persuaded the university there to fund a wave of what he called motion studies. About half of them are photographs in stop motion of women and men in the nude, in wrestling positions, or smoking cigarettes, or walking dogs, and they're prurient by our eyes. But he passed them off as science.
And then he met Thomas Edison, didn't he?
Yes, in about 1889, he was giving a talk in Orange, New Jersey, where Edison had his laboratory, and Edison sent one of his associates to the talk and invited Muybridge to come meet him, and they talked about collaborating, and Edison said, well, show me your pictures, show me what you do. And Edison became engrossed with Muybridge's project. And it was out of this meeting that Edison produced the first celluloid cameras to make motion pictures.
Well, he had a reputation for co-opting other people's ideas, but in this case, he really did advance what Muybridge was doing.
He did. What happened was celluloid was invented as a material about 1893, and it was by using this material to expose thousands of images in sequence that the movie cameras became possible.
So what happened to Muybridge afterward?
He was quite well known straight through the end of his life. At the World's Fair in Chicago in 1893, he had his own pavilion. He crisscrossed the country giving talks to full houses. And then he moved as an old man back to England, where he had not lived for 50 years. And he moved back to his little hometown outside of London, where he died in 1904. Having seen...
So he saw
pictures. He saw the first film theaters opening. And he was chagrined by it, but he knew that he had been passed by.
Well, Nickelodeons are closer to what he was doing, the things where you looked into a little eyepiece and turned a crank.
Right, yes. These kinetoscopes is what Edison called them. Nickelodeons, these boxes that you peered into, were 30-second spectacles that were very much like what Muybridge did, yeah.
Edward Ball is the author of 4 works of nonfiction, including the best-selling National Book Award-winning Slaves and the Family. His latest is The Inventor and the Tycoon, A Gilded Age Murder and the Birth of Moving Pictures. It is published by Doubleday. And I thank you so much for being with us again.
It's a pleasure. Thank you.